Captain's Magazine. Livsintervjuer. Nytt avsnitt och nyhet. Nu är det Captain's Magazine.
Welcome to another episode of the Tennis Magazine's podcast with me, Linus Eriksson. Today we're gonna meet Vinicius Oliveira. Vinicius is a Brazilian coach, well-educated through many different universities. For example, the University Center of Maringa, the University of Barcelona, and the University of Extremadura. He's also been taking a lot of courses through the Brazilian Tennis Federation coaching system. Vinicius have worked a couple of months in the beginning of this year at Mälarhöjdens Tennis in Stockholm. Otherwise, he's right now the CEO of United Tennis in Spain and have before that worked as the head coach of Global Tennis Team in Spain and spent a few years at the Sanchez Casal Academy in Barcelona. In this episode, we talk about the differences in coaching styles between Spain and Sweden, how much trouble the weather in Sweden is when developing tennis players, why it will be difficult to develop international players in Sweden when we practice less and compete less than players in many other countries do, Vinicius' experience from working at a big academy like Sanchez Casal, and what he have learned from all the coaches he's been working together with at different academies. This episode is sponsored by Tennisshoppen. If you go to tennisshoppen.se and use the code TennisLinus at the cashier, you will get 15% discount. Now, please welcome Vinicius Oliveira. I'm very happy to welcome Vinicius Oliveira to the podcast. Vinicius, I would like to start talking about your background. You're originally from Brazil. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
How is the tennis in Brazil nowadays?
Well, the tennis in Brazil, I think, is a really elite sport right now. So that's not so many people playing. And I don't know if it is a problem or not, but I really wish in the future we can like develop more the sports for give the opportunity for all the people play or more people play in Brazil, because I really like tennis and I think the environment of tennis will help also not only in the physical side but in the mental side of the people.
Why is not so many people playing? Because they like soccer more, or
Well, that's one of the things. They like soccer more, but also the economic part of the sport. The sport tennis is not easy because there is just like clubs, like social clubs, where you really need to pay the fee to be in the clubs, or you need an academy, tennis academy, or there's no public courts a lot in Brazil. There's some in São Paulo, Rio, and the big cities where you can use, but not like in Argentina where you have more public courts and like cheap fee to pay on clubs to training.
Okay.
So it's really expensive in Brazil.
Okay, so that's the main problem, sort of.
For me, yes. That's the main problem of the sport right now.
Okay. In Sweden, we talk a lot about our history and our tradition with a lot of great players, and that we need some role models to look up to make the interest grow among the younger players. In Brazil, I can guess there was sort of an attention boom with Gustavo Kuerten a couple of years ago. How have the Brazil been doing to keep up the interest after Gustavo's success?
Exactly. I was part of the boom because I'm watching Gustavo Kuerten. Yeah. I love to see the matches against Pete Sampras, against Agassi, when he played Roland Garros.
Yeah, it was there's, amazing.
Yes, there's one Roland Garros they put in the like public TV so everyone can watch him.
Okay.
It was beautiful. Like the country stopped to see Guga.
Oh, really?
Yes, was really nice.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think there are many kids start to play, but in that moment, but you are not ready for it because of the formation of the coaches, maybe the public schools, the schools can offer something about tennis on that moment for like create a big okay. environment of tennis. But we are not ready for that.
Okay.
So the time pass, Guga have some injuries like Magnus Norman,
exactly.
the same injury.
Yeah.
And then he stopped. And you can, for me, you can compare Guga like Ayrton Senna.
Okay.
He's really charismatic person, so everyone loves him. Mm. If Guga come in the room, everyone start smiling because he's a really nice guy. He's happiness all the time.
Yeah.
So that thing also help the people to start to play tennis. But we don't have other right now.
Mm.
So I wish we can have one Gustavo Kuerten again would be difficult.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
somebody similar.
Okay.
Which can get that charisma of the people. Mm. And for sure, Brazil now will be better.
Okay.
Because the federation gave some courses for the people who start to play a little bit more.
Ah.
Also, the universities of physical education in Brazil is increasing now. So the sports become a little bit more serious from the science side.
Okay.
I come from this side also.
Okay.
So I really follow it in Brazil. Ah. I work in Foreign University in Brazil also.
Okay.
And the thing is getting better, but we really need a player.
So if another Guga comes, like, makes some success now, you think Brazil is more ready to handle the attention and the new generation more?
Exactly. I think he's more ready. I think he's more ready. And because of the first boom, they didn't enjoy too much on the first 5 years, we can say.
Mm.
I think they know now.
Yeah.
So the federation knows well.
So I guess if, let's say, Sweden, if we get some really good players here, we hope Sweden is ready to handle the attention from the younger players.
Exactly, I hope so.
But the last years you have worked in Spain.
Yes.
How come you went to Spain to work?
Okay, so I'm living in Spain since 10 years ago.
Mm.
And I came just to do a master degree in high performance in sports in Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
For me, I research a lot about that because I like to study. And when I finished university and the master degree in Brazil, I met one guy who told me about this master in Barcelona, and I started to research about that. And I say, wow, that's a really high level.
Mm.
So I sent some letters and I decided to move to Barcelona to study.
Okay.
By the way, I don't have the money to live there. So I have to find a job also.
Okay.
So I came to Sanchez Casal. Mm. I met Emilio Sanchez,
uh-huh.
and I told him, please, Emilio, give me a place to sleep and eat, and I can work how many hours you want, and that I really want to study
okay.
and work here. And that opportunity to work in Sanchez Casal was not only for work. Uh-huh. I really learned a lot there
okay.
because there's a huge academy, many coaches,
yeah.
all over the world, many players. They have a system.
Yeah.
And so I learned the system. They have really good coaches there, which exchange kind of information inside of the system. So it was really interesting. So I did a master degree in one side, but for me, I did a PhD in work in Barcelona, in the Sanchez Casal Academy.
So you talk about the system.
Yes.
At Sanchez Casal.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes. So who created that system was Pato Alvarez.
Uh-huh.
And he used to work with more than 50 top 100 players.
That's so a lot.
That's a lot. For me, it's a lot. And he used the same system for every player.
Okay.
Which I don't agree so much, but it's okay.
He made some results.
Because it works.
Yeah.
So we cannot say anything about it. And that system make part of the career of Emilio Sanchez Vicario and Sergio Casal.
Okay.
These two guys, they was, I think, 4 years number one in the world in doubles. Emilio was number 7 singles. Sergio was number 20 in singles also. And these guys, they took the system, create Sanchez Casal Academy, and improve that system every year, or we can say every week.
Okay.
Because when they start working, they took the positive parts of the system from Pato Alvarez and they start to modern it a little bit, like put like new inputs.
Okay.
And also when I'm working there, I have meeting. We have meeting every weekend. No, we have meeting every month.
Okay.
And also in the meetings, they talk about the system. And some coaches, have the opportunity to say, oh, Emilio, maybe if we do this exercise on this way, it will be nice. And they say, ah, okay. So the system, just to summarize a bit, don't be too long, is like this. From Monday to Friday, you have all the exercise to do. So I arrived there from Brazil. I have no idea how to work in Sanchez Casal, but they give me a paper. And from this paper, I say, oh, okay. So Monday in the morning, I have to do hand feeds or like very close to the player working on the technique. And in the afternoon, they have to do rallies and serve. So during the week, that exercise will exchange. So on Thursday, I have to do almost the same drills in the morning, but throw with the racket. So more real balls.
Okay.
And afternoons, they have to play matches and work a lot of volleys and some strategies with doubles. Because they really like doubles there. Well, there's a, the tradition from them also.
That's what you don't agree with. No.
No, no, no. I agree. What I don't agree is like to do everything the same for each player.
So there's no individual like perspective or individual setup.
When you're working on the group, no.
Okay.
Maybe the player can book an individual class with you and can work more specific with him.
Okay.
But also when I'm there, I took that system and start to make something individual or put some goals for the players during the exercise because they do a lot of drills. But the player don't know if he put 8 balls in or 20 balls in. Okay. I say, okay, now we do these drills and you put 8 balls in.
Okay.
So that was kind of improvement on the system. And also talking with Emilio, Sergio and Antonio Hernandez, he passed away 5 years ago, but they always are very open to say, oh, interesting. So you can use it. So to be fair, it's like this. They have a system. But if the coach take the system and work a bit more specific, they can make the system even much better.
Okay.
So I think always depend on the coach also.
But when you say like on Monday morning, it's hand feeding drills, for example, can you choose which drills you want to do? Or do have they decided exactly?
They have exactly what to have to do.
Okay. So every court is doing the same things.
Yes.
Okay.
That was for me, big academies. It's really good because you don't know if your coach, if you're a boss, you don't know if your coach will working well or not.
Okay.
Okay, maybe you can believe in the coach because you have a good experience also. But there, you come back on Monday. You come on Monday. All the courts are doing boom, boom, the same exercise.
Okay.
So that's a good thing for the academy control the system and knows the players are working in some goals with the exercise.
Okay. So it's like you said, it's a super big academy, many players, many coaches, many courts.
Yes.
It's like every player getting some, is every player being seen? I mean, it's easy to like just be one of thousands of players. Do you think everyone gets the attention individually? Do you understand my question?
Yes, yes. Was like I told you before, for me, depend on the coach. If the coach just come in on court and do the system, no, for sure not. Okay. I working with 9 players, 9 girls ITF players, 9 different nationalities. It was crazy. I was the coach who had the only group with different nationalities, all the all the players. But was okay, we do the system, but in the end, you have to talk with each player.
Okay.
You have to have lunch with each player and you really have to know if the player are okay. If they're fine, how is the goal? So they have, that's true. They have particular goals with the psychologist and we have meeting, individual meeting with the psychologist, but it's a lot of work outside of the court.
Okay.
And this, the coach can choose. Okay. Okay, the coach had to work in 6 hours on court and 2 hours on the computer in Sanchez Casal. In my time was like this, 2011. And then he can decide like if he work more hours or not. But when I'm there, I'm living there, I'm eating there, and then, you know, we love tennis, and I really try to make my group the best group of the academy.
Okay.
So I work a lot on that private, like, or individual inside of the group.
Okay.
So in the system, it's difficult to have.
Oh, I understand.
If the coach wants to do that, yes, he can. It's a lot of work.
You said that when you came to Emilio in the beginning and asked for work, you said, I can work how much you want. How much do the coaches work normally there?
So that is the way they work, 8 hours per day. they have to work 8 hours per day.
Ah.
But only 6 hours on court,
mm.
3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon.
Okay.
And 2 hours, you have the time to be in the computer, because the system you do on court, you have to pass to the computer. So that's a kind of history from the players. So the in the end of the month, they know how many exercises the player did.
Okay.
How many sets the player did, how many tie breaks they play.
Oh, you put everything in the computer.
You have to. Okay. Yes. That was not so easy for me because, you know, I like to be on court and I'm not so good to take notes.
Okay.
I'm really bad at this. I forgot many things. But when I'm there, the head coach came to me and he said, Antonio told him, Vinny, you have to put everything on the paper. Otherwise, you do during the day and you come here, it's easy to forget what you did in the morning.
I understand.
I said, okay. So then I started to take notes and I learned a bit.
Okay.
So that is the way what they work.
What else did you learn from the biggest coaches there?
Okay. That time? So during that time, my English was really bad.
Mm?
And then I decided to sit inside of the court where the coaches speak English with the players.
Okay.
There's Spanish coaches, but they speak English.
Mm.
Not amazing accent, but was easy for me to understand, you know, what they are doing.
Mm.
So when they finish, like, some exercise, I always go and ask why they're doing exercise, why they think this is better. So every coach, they have some specific thing to tell me. And there is one coach, well, there's a lot of coach, but there is one coach, Stefan Ortega. He worked many years with Francesca Jones.
Okay.
You know her?
Yeah, yeah.
And she was there like with 12 years old and they doing like, I don't know, maybe 200 balls per exercise.
Okay.
Like without stopping.
Okay.
And they say, wow, how this girl with 12 years old? And I come and then ask and say, Stefan, how is that possible? And said, Vinny, this she really need to learn. That hard work. That's here is not only about footwork or closed stance or open stance or technique or if she need to play cross or no. It's her mental side need to handle to really play that 200 balls.
Okay.
So in that time I realized, I say, oh, okay, many people criticize some coaches who doing a lot of drills, do a lot of rotation. But there's a positive side also behind it. So when I see some people talking about like bad about space and these coaches, they just do drills and the player get injury. I do one step back and I say, well, there's a positive sign behind it because there's work a lot on the mental side.
Mm.
And from Pato Alvarez, the boss of the system, he was 72 years old, I think, when I'm there. And when he was on court, he always have something to teach.
Okay.
So there's one exercise they call 3 of 20. And I ask him, Pato, why you do this exercise just with this player? In the moment was he's sparring, but he was 14 in the world. Pitu Viloca, we call him. And he said, Vinny, because if I do this exercise with one guy with 400 ATP, he cannot put the ball in my racket. So I'm too old to keep him move. So that feeling to put the ball all the time in the correct place, in the correct target, is a very good training for the player also. So that's one thing I learned also. So when I do exercise, when I do exercise with my players and I'm on the net volleying for them, I say, look, if I move my feet, it's because you're playing really bad. It's not because I have to volley amazing for you. No, you have to put the ball exactly in my racket and I just stop the racket. And then you are the good player. And Pato told me about Dimitrov and Murray also when he training them. He can use this exercise perfect with them. They put the ball exactly what he wants.
That's cool.
Yes. So like this, there's a lot of histories from him, what he coaching the players. So that's really big knowledge.
I think we in Sweden, we have a picture of Spanish tennis and the Spanish, I don't know, system or way of practicing as like it's a lot of drills, a lot of long rallies, a lot of hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a correct picture in general, would you say, after your years in Spain?
Okay, for me, there is not a system on Spain.
Okay.
And this I learned with Geoffrey Porta, was the second, the third academy where I work in Mallorca, Global Tennis. And Geoffrey Porta working with Carlos Moyá, with Rafa Nadal, and he work in the federation in Mallorca. He's like really like fan of the knowledge of tennis, and it's so a lot of things to teach also. But he told me, I asked him the same question you asked me, and he told me, Vinny, there is not a system in Spain. The coaches, they really like to work hard. They really like to develop the mental side of the player inside of the court.
Okay.
With the suffering, with the fight hard, with to try more, with to do many hours. Right now they're doing less hours with the KC because of the injuries. But he said, everyone work in one way. But I think that's the common things of the teaching of the coaches in Spain is this. They really work hard. They are really tough with the players. And they really put the mental side inside of the court.
Okay.
I think that's the common things. But I'm also, like, particular, like a coach, I don't believe in the systems. So, okay, I work in Sanchez Casal. I work in Ferrero Equilite.
Yeah.
I work in Global Tennis. They have the kind of way to teach there. I don't know if you can call a system. To be fair, the only place I had, I saw the really closed system was in Sanchez Casal. The other academies, no.
Okay.
And I believe in the same way, like, okay, if today I coach some player, I have to see how the player play. I have to have empathy with the player to see if they can really suffer, if I really can shout him or really I can explain the things to him. So that is my vision now with the good coaches, even in Spain.
Okay.
They work in more individual.
Okay.
Much more in everyone, much more individual. I think in the way the times of Pato Álvarez, they work like a group and they work like everyone doing the same.
Okay.
And but that time passed. The people become better.
So you don't think that like a system like that can work today?
No.
No. Okay.
My opinion is this. I don't believe in this.
Okay. You said that one thing in general in Spain is that the coaches are kind of tough with the players. Can you explain more what you mean with that?
Yes. So for me, what I see really good coaches in Spain is, well, they arrive on court and the players start to do like rallies. And from that time, they start to talk. They talk a lot.
Okay.
I don't like to talk a lot on court, but they can see the player, the coach are, venga, vamos, va, va, una más, vamos, vamos, va, vamos, una más. So that's all the time like this, really intense. Doesn't matter if the player are playing forehand cross court.
Okay.
But they really push hard from the forehand cross court.
Okay.
So I think that the characteristic of the Spanish coaches, we can say, or the people who work in Spain, because they learn on this way. And also, they do like hand drills, no? Like feed from the hand drills. They push the players hard. They really want to the players like break with the legs, stay low. Push from the legs, push from the legs all the time. Footwork, footwork. I think they care a lot about the footwork there. And they for working with this, you have to push the player.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not easy.
But you don't agree with that way of coaching, or? Did I understand you wrong?
No, if I tell you I don't agree, I'm lying because I'm doing it sometimes.
Okay.
But it's like I told you before, depend on the player.
Okay.
I'm sure if we do it with Yannick Sinner right now too much, maybe he'll give up or he don't like it or he'll get injured because you can see he play more, much more clean. He play when the ball on the rise all the time. He cut the time. He don't push too much from the legs. He have more timing than other stuff. The same like Federer or I don't know. But maybe if you're working on this way with Dimitrov, a bit more would be better. So for me, it's really difficult to say if I agree or not in one thing what the coaches are doing. For me, for one player works, for other player doesn't work.
But you must have been influenced by the coaches you have worked around.
Exactly.
A bit. I mean.
No, a lot.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of influence from Sanchez Casal. In my weight work, I use a lot of exercise from them. I have a lot of influence from Equilite Academy, the coach Samuel Lopez he's with Pablo Carreño Busta. I don't know if they're together now, but I think yes, they are. So he teach me a lot there. I learned a lot of him. That is a kind of different Spanish coach because he don't shouting so much on court, but he's really serious. When he's on court, like there's any birds you can hear, you can see just him because he's really serious. So I learned a lot with him. With Jofre Porta also, there's a lot of creative in every exercise. So the player are never boring when they train with Jofre because it's everything new, all the time new, maybe too much new sometimes, but I got that influence. And the last time with my academy, I working with my partner, Matias Cáceres, and he came from the Argentinian school. Was really new for me. In the Argentinian school, he worked there with Horacio Ceballos. He was like the same age, so they trained together many years. And also with Sebastian Gutierrez, he's the coach of Sebastian Baez right now. So Baez do some weeks with us. And that kind of knowledge from the Argentinian coaches, for me, was what makes to grow more on the high performance level of the players. So that the for me, the Argentinian coaches, which I talk a lot now, the last maybe 4 years, they really see, okay, this player play like this. What he needs to be top 200. Okay, he need that. So we work on it. He need percentage of first serve. He need much more like intensity on the slice. And he need to learn some drop shots. Otherwise, he cannot grow. He will be the same on the ranking 400. Okay, so they work on that. And they work really hard on that. When they see that improve, perfect. Now we will see what they need to be top 100.
Okay, so they take go on step by step, sort of.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm fan of like Jose Perlas also. I never met him, but I know many things from him, from Jofre and from other friend called Thiago Leivas who working with him also. So I learned a lot from and that methodology of him also. He always like, okay, we'll try to reach that level. So we have to do these kind of steps. So that's like common things also between like the Argentinian coaches and Jose Perlas. So I'm fun to see. I love to see like new knowledge from these coaches. And that is my input, and I try to put, I know, a little bit from my essence, which for me is I'm really positive on court all the time. I try, if you have some problem, I don't try to like shout in the player in that moment. I try to be too negative. So then when the training finish, I say, okay, let's have a coffee. So with my player Yvonne, there is one boy from Argentina, Facundo, he asked me, oh, Vini, but how you working with Yvonne? Because now she's get some results. And I say, no, I coach her much more on the sofa, drinking coffee, than on court. Because it's true, on court, she's amazing. She's doing everything. You ask her to do, okay, 300 slides down the line, she'll do that. No problem. But then, when she's silent, and when she's thinking too much, you know it's something wrong. And in that moment, you have to open the mind of the player. So that's, I think, is my essence to really try to have empath of the players, with the players, and to see where they can improve the most on the like mental part to the game and transfer it for the court.
This episode is sponsored by Tennis Hoppen. Go to tennishoppen.se, use the discount code TennisLinus, and you will get 15% discount of your buy.
You told me here you have worked with Jofre Portas.
Jofre Porta.
Jofre Porta. What are coaches like, for example, him or other great coaches, what are they doing that maybe other coaches are not doing because they help so many good players evolve?
Exactly. For me, Jofre, it's a very, for me, he's a genius.
Okay, that's big words.
Yes, no, but for me, yes, because you watching his exercise, you cannot see in any part of the world.
Okay.
It's only he's like.
Is that correct?
Yeah, you. When he's doing the okay, maybe he do the exercise with the hand where Pato Alvarez start to working more close with the player, but his way to do this exercise is completely different.
Okay.
Because he put some inertia on the technique, he pushed the player back, the player have to go against the ball, against their inertia, he put the eccentric power, and he knows everything what he are doing on this exercise.
Okay.
Because he studied a lot. He read a lot, he talk a lot of coaches, he doing many conferences, and he took the input from the other coaches. So in one exercise of Joffre, you can see maybe lateralities from Podorochenko. You can see eccentric power from the fitness coach of Rafa Nadal. Mm. And you can see the really pressure on the mental side from his side, because he's shouting the player a lot in that moment, and he wants to see if the player will hold it or not. So that's a lot of things. And he created.
Okay.
So for me, that is his difference.
Okay.
Between other coaches, like me, they took the positive things from the other people. They see, okay, that knowledge will be nice. So let's use in it, and they more copy than other stuff, no? Okay, we create a little bit, but Joffre, completely new.
Okay.
Sometimes, it's too, like I told you, like it's too much new, but well, when we are there, for me, it's learning every day.
Okay.
And because of these new things and a lot of things, I say, okay, Joffre, excellent. Now, we have to put it in the planification of the players, because we cannot do one inertia and change the technique in the serve and put the mental part if tomorrow they will play a tennis Europe.
Yeah, I understand.
So at that moment, we have to play a set. I know it's so boring for Joffre to watch in the courts and see all the players playing a set. But we have to do it. So that was our, I think our, he is like a, I don't know, father for me. So we have very good feelings to plan together.
Okay. Okay.
So Sunday night, I send him to the planification of the week. He opened it. Monday, we have a meeting with all the coaches, and I say, that week we're working on this way.
Yeah, I understand.
So the beginning of the week, there is the creative exercise from him. And in the end of the week, it was, because they have tournament, was a little bit more specific on the game.
Okay. So now you have been in Sweden since January. For when we talk now, it's almost 4 months.
Yes.
How much of all of these things you learned in Spain or on like in Brazil and other places, how much of that have you can you use in the Swedish environment with the Swedish mentality and way of, I mean, how everything works here?
Okay. So for me, it was a great experience to be here because I can see. So how to put it on the court here, first I have to know how the player plays. So the first month here, we did some videos, take some slow motion to see the technique of the players, and then I can see the system more or less. I talk with the head coaches here on the, at the club to see, okay, the players are doing it, they play this amount of hours. And with that big picture, I say, oh, okay, I'll try my best. But I cannot do much because they don't play many hours. And also, here in Sweden, they have a system where the coach at the club, he have to work in with 5-6 players in 3 courts.
You mean one coach?
One coach.
Many,
2 hours.
Many courts. Yeah, okay.
Yes. So in my opinion, this doesn't work.
Okay.
Okay. It's really difficult talking about high performance. Yeah, I don't talk sports. Okay, to give some sports for the kids and to them to play for fun.
But if we talk
fun,
high performance,
talk about performance, it's impossible right now to work in with players like a group like this. They play 6 hours, no, 2, 4. Yeah, it's like 12 hours per week. And I have to divide my time on these 6 players in that 12 hours per week. It's really tough.
You mean the coaches have too many players to have the responsibility for?
Perfect.
Okay.
Very good.
Yes. So let's say when you normally you work in Spain now with your own academy.
Yes, my own academy.
Yeah. So how many players are you in charge of there?
So there is a 5 players who work in high performance in there morning in afternoon, and we are right now 4 coaches.
On 5 players.
5 players.
But that's very high quality.
It's what we believe.
Okay, so how do you make it go around financially with so many coaches on so few players?
The players pay really expensive amount.
Okay.
That's the only way to get quality.
So and here, can I ask how much does it cost?
Okay, so here, I just to say it, yeah. But here I understand why the club's working like this. Because when I discover how much the players pay here, I say, wow, that's nothing. So what that costs in Spain, what the players pay here per year in the clubs in Sweden is the cost for 1 month in Mallorca.
Okay.
So you can say maybe 40,000 per year they pay.
40,000
euros per year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the price more or less.
Mm. So you think if to be able to raise the quality here, we need to charge higher amount of like
exactly fee. It's the only way. Otherwise, okay, the club, they have me here and they have to pay me with 6 players, but if they want to have much more quality for these players, they need 3 Vini, and 3 Vini, it's really expensive.
So
the players need to pay more.
So you think how many players can a coach be responsible for?
2 maximum. Maybe if they are young, 3.
Okay.
14 years old, could be 3.
Yeah. All right.
But for me, more than 2. Mm. And when you travel, more than 3, impossible.
Yeah.
Okay, you can do less quality. But to really watching the matches, training hard, talk with the player after matches, more than 3, the coach become crazy.
what other differences have you experienced here from what you're used to?
Right now we are in Corona, it's difficult to say, but I'm talking with the coaches, I'm talking with the head coach here from the young kids, and there is not many competitions for the players here in Sweden. So that's really difficult to develop your player when they cannot compete. And they have the competitions during the week here. Okay, maybe the system is like this and they have to do like this. But if the parents work during the week and cannot take the kids for the tournament and the kids cannot compete, I think that amount of hours on the competition, official matches, it's really, really, really small. So to building tennis players on that path, on that environment, for me, is impossible.
So you mean in Spain, for example, the tournaments are on weekends?
Perfect. So in Spain, every weekend in Mallorca. If you say Barcelona, there is more than 10 tournaments per weekend.
But in Barcelona?
Yes. Barcelona is a lot.
Okay.
But in Mallorca, every weekend, there is a tournament.
Okay.
So it's really easy. We can choose how many matches my player can get it during the planification.
Okay.
And right now with the Rafa Nadal Academy, even better.
Yeah.
Because there's different players.
Yeah. You also said you experienced that we practice less here. How much more do you practice in Spain than you have seen here?
Okay. So that's a very, very good, I think, feedback from Frederik Johansson here.
Mm.
They did some researches about that. And here, the specific amount of hours for each player until 14 years old, it's the number of the chronologic age. Mm. So if they have 12 years old, they have to work training tennis 12 hours per week. So my experience in Mallorca with my players, we have a small group of young players. So I start with this group, the players was 8 years old, only 3 players. And from 8 years old, they train 1.5 hours tennis and 1 hour fitness. Monday to Friday.
Okay.
And Saturday and Sunday, they play tournaments all the time. They want to play because they like to go to tournaments and see the friends. And when they don't play tournaments, they have some matches with friends. They go to the club and stay there. Some of them go with the father because the father wants to play. So imagining how many hours these players with 8 years old will be when they have 14.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we compare with one player here in Sweden, the experience what I have here in the club, 8 years old, this player, he play only 2 hours per week. And when they have 10, I think they play 3 hours per week. And when they have 12, they play 5 hours per week here. So that's, compared with my players, is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So our steps, it goes too slow, sort of.
Yes, too slow. And the hours of the competition is like, is nothing. When they reach, they're 14 years old and they have to go to France to play Tennis Europe. They have to go to German. They compete with players who do a lot of hours. And also, I understand here there is difficult to play indoor. There is not many hours free for the players to play. But if we talk about high performance, not social clubs, if we talk about how high performance, there is no way for the players have a really good performance if they don't play many hours and with good quality.
Do you think it's a big disadvantage we have here that with the weather that we need to be indoor this much? Now you have been here during the winter, but I mean our outdoor season is quite short anyway.
So that was an amazing experience and for me and quite new. I thought the indoor courts was not so much like bad for the players. But then I came here, first month, the player is hitting the ball like an animal. Boom, boom, big serves, amazing. You say, whoa, these guys, they play amazing. Nice, let's work in with them. So I working with them 2 months, 3 months. And then I took these players and we go for the Easter time in Mallorca to play a tournament in Mallorca and training there. We arrive there on Sunday, okay. We arrive Saturday. And then Sunday, we come into the court to play. And these guys are playing with my players. My players, they have a normal level. Okay, 1 point ATP, 2 points. Some ITFs guys, like the two ITFs guys, they play quite okay. But I thought, watching the players here, they will play much better than my players. But then, when they arrive on clay, outside, with the wind, they cannot play.
It's another world.
It's another world. And then I say, wow. Will be really difficult to build in players in the indoor court. Because indoor is too easy. They don't need to do backswing. They can play almost without backswing. The serve is always amazing because the toss is so easy, the ball goes fast, so you have a good feeling for that, and the ball come back really slow. And when I watching the players from Sweden playing their first tournament on clay in Mallorca with windy Spanish players playing with a lot of topspin, push them back and they cannot play, and they, some of them retired on the second set because they are really tired. And they say, wow, okay, so now I understand why the top 100 players play all the year outside. Most of them.
Do you think it's important to play outside on clay, or is it just to play outside?
For me, and this also come from a little bit from Geoffrey Porta, you have to build in the player. You have to form the player on clay. Not only on clay, a bit in hard courts also. But on clay is much more tough for the mental side and also for the legs. When, because when you have to break, you really need the eccentric strength on the legs to come back after the break. But when the player have already 16 years old, I think they need maybe 60% hard courts outdoor because you have more tournaments on the tour. And 40% clay courts outdoor.
Okay, so you need to, you to grow up on clay is good, and then you you switch a little bit more to hard courts during the way.
I think it's the good thing. And also this thing about hard courts outside, we talk a lot with Frederick. And we really believe, like on Gears, the WTA, Jaguars really need to play hard court outside.
I'm also a bit curious about your experience with differences in the coaching styles from what you're used to in Spain with what you have seen here in Sweden. Is there any differences or similarities in how we're coaching and how we talk with the players or creating the practices?
Okay. It's difficult to say because for me, each person is different.
Of course. But in general.
In general, what I can see is in Spain, in Argentina, there is more intensity from the coaches.
Okay, here, like talking more or like
talking more, but also the body language of the coaches there is almost like they want more than the player. They really go intense. Bah, vamos, one more. Come on, they work 4 hours, the Spanish coaches or the Argentinian, and they don't want to work more. They can't.
Okay.
Because it's really like tough for them. Okay. And here, maybe it's in the system. I cannot say about, I don't know, many coaches in Sweden. But when the coaches like working here, they are a little bit more relaxed, more chill with the players. So, but you know, I shared the court with Christian Bermström.
Yeah.
And he was really intense. In 40 minutes, I become really tired just to see him training. And he's from Sweden.
Yeah.
Okay. So but there's one guy, like, really good experience. So that you have like specific cases, you know?
Yeah, of course.
In general, what I see, because I've been in some clubs watching the trainings from the young kids also.
Yeah.
Here, the people are more relaxed. When we talk about high performance, if the kids, they have 8 years old.
Yeah.
You have to teach them. They are there for compete. Mm. They really have to work hard. Otherwise, go for fun. And that's it. That's okay also. No problem.
And among the players, if we compare the mentality a little bit, you talked about in Spain how the coaches sometimes create the practices to make the players strong mentally. They work on it on the court as well. What is your feeling about the mentality among the Swedish players?
Okay, so
in general as well.
Yes, but and then I have this problem, but it's like my essence, you know. For me, the players, they are young and they are open to learn. So if the players, they have a mentality to don't work hard, it's my fault, like a coach.
Okay.
So I came here, some of the players don't want to work. So, and then we sit and say, okay, what is your goal on life?
On life?
Yes, first. Say, what do you want to do? Many of them, they don't know. And then I ask, okay, what is your dream? Some of them is to be like a professional tennis player. When you know the dream, okay. And then you really have to push them. Because if you don't push them, they are really far away from the dream. And when you work for nothing, it's not so easy, but when you work for the dream, you really can move mountains. And also, I work in with players here in Sweden, which the goal is not to be a professional tennis player, but they have a goal to go to the university and to be a good worker after. And they say, okay, the tennis, it's really important to teaching you how hard is the life. Because when the tennis try to teaching you, or your coach or your father or mother, they try to teaching you with love. But when the life teaching you, they always teaching you with pain. It's really hard when the life hit you. I think the life hit me 2 times and it's really tough, really, really tough for that. So the players, some of the players I work here, they don't have the mentality to work. So I say, okay, if I be 4 months here and I don't build in that mentality, I'm failed. I did wrong. So I really try to work hard with them outside of the court, talk with them to create it. And I can say not all of them works. Maybe 2 don't want to do. It's okay. Fine. I respect them. We become friends. But the other players, they change. And then when they change, you really can push them. So I think there is a big responsibility from the coaches when the players don't want to work hard.
Okay.
So that is kind of improve the forehand technique.
Yeah. Is your picture that the players are working hard here?
No. Like, the in general, is too chill.
Okay. Compared with the general players in Spain?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, you go for when I went 2 years in one preseason in Argentina.
Ah. Okay.
You can see what is work hard. The player, Thursday, normally they don't train Saturday and Sunday on the preseason. Thursday, the player cannot go to the court.
Okay.
In the preseason.
Ah.
For me, that's really hard work, hard.
Yeah.
And the Friday, they go to the court, but they go with the mental side. There's nobody anymore.
Mm-hmm. Another subject that we sometimes talk a lot about in Sweden is the communication with parents. What's your experience from that here in Sweden, and how do you work with it in Spain?
Okay, so here was nice because I came with a lot of energy the first week.
Yeah.
And was funny because when I coach in the young kids, I try to put like high intensity, go work hard, and one of them fall down and did like something in the knee, and they say, "Yeah, stand up, no problem, come on, go." "Oh, but there's a blood." "Yeah, don't care, go." "No problem." "Let's go, man, work hard." And then the day after, there was some call from the head coach here. He said, "Vinny, be careful with this game, you know, when they pick up balls really fast." And then I say, "Ah, okay, so I really have to go a little bit slow." So that was my first impression, which is fine.
Yeah.
But then after I talk with the father, he's really nice. He coached the kid also, and then they agreed, no problem.
Yeah.
It's fine, and we keep work hard. Right now, I'm very like good friend of all of them. And this, I changed my mentality about the parents 3 years ago, because I always struggling with parents.
Okay.
I always have a problem. I know they want the best for the player, but they try to protect too much the player. They always think the player play with the worst opponent. They always think they need to have more hours private. They have everything the best for the own kid, but they forgot there's a group, no?
Yeah, exactly.
And they have to train it with someone. So the other one also is important on the group. So this is stressed me a lot. And one coach from Argentina, Sebastian Gutierrez, he came to me. He said, "Vinny, you are so stressed with the parents." "And why? Why? All the parents are wrong. They cannot be wrong all the time." And they say, no, they are completely wrong. They destroy my life. It's very difficult. I cannot talk with the parents. I want to work with the players." He said, "Impossible. The parents will pay you." So you have to deal with the parents.
Okay.
And he said, "Start to do meetings with them. And start to explain them your problems. And start to explain them why they put too much stress on the project. And start to explain them why on this way you don't believe that you help the kids. But go in one official way. Meeting, lunch, and explain the parts." And the first meeting we did together, me and him.
Okay.
And he did a like kind of conference for the parents to talk about the values of the tennis for the players. And after that day, right now, when I have something with the parents, I never think it's a problem.
Okay.
I think it's an opportunity to explain the parents they can do better, and the player will be better, and me also will be in better relation with the father or mother. I know it's difficult. There's some parents really tough. But this kind of parents is because maybe they want a lot for the kids. And you can try to transfer it on the positive way. So I'm changing a little bit.
But from what you have seen or heard here in Sweden, how we communicate and work together with the parents, you think it's like a healthy environment, like in how much the parents are involved?
No, I think here in Sweden, they try to block the parents from the project. And I don't agree with that.
Okay, you feel that we do that too much?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the parents, they have to be engaged on the project. They have to know what is the place on the project, and they have to respect it.
Okay.
If the parent don't respect it, so he is not in the project. So he's destroying the project. And then the coach have to decide if the money is important or if the project is important.
Okay.
So that I lost. In Mallorca, I lost 3 players. Nice players.
Yeah.
Because of the parts. But maybe if I realize now how was the situation, because the situation was 4 years ago, maybe I become like better to do more meetings.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But my impression here, I think we need to train in the parents. We really need to coach in them also. Mm. We really need to put them on the project and to tell them, okay, when you're watching your kids and when you tell your kids different things from the coach, you're completely wrong. So they have to understand it, because sometimes they do it through the emotions. They don't do it on purpose. They do it because they love the kids too much. So I think this will be a good step if the clubs here, or I don't know, everyone, everyone in the world can start to put that like parents' profession, we can say, in the project and start to training them.
Okay.
I think it would be better for everyone.
Okay, we will soon go over to the questions I ask to all my guests. But before that, to summarize your experience here in Sweden, do you think like a club environment in Sweden is a place to create and develop international tennis players?
I didn't see any environment.
Okay, so we need to raise the quality to be able to compete international, you think?
Yes, I think the clubs have to decide. We're working with high performance players.
Yeah.
Excellent. So if the club decided, so take 6 hours, the courts for the players, take good trainers, good coaches, and pay the coaches really well for working with these kids, and they say, okay, this will be the group of high performance. And then many groups of high performance in all Sweden working together. I know here they have the camps. I know the Tennis Stockholm did some camps. For me, this is amazing. I went to Sauk. All the players are there. That's unbelievable. We cannot see it in Spain. We don't have it. Everyone training together. For me, that's amazing. But it's amazing when you have a lot of good players. And to have a lot of good players, you really need to start when they are 8 years old.
Quite early.
Or even before. So when you have that process of high performance training from the fitness side, from the parent side, from the technical side, mental side, and competition side, if you have that process, I'm sure in 5 years, in 6 years, Sweden will be really good on tennis, because the facilities, okay, maybe indoor courts is tough, but sharing the players like they are doing, like the camps in Tennis Stockholm, also the federation with with Matthias, they doing camps, I saw with the girls. Yeah,
sometimes.
Yes. Okay, excellent. Nice. But you really need to have high level in all these camps to work in together. And to get the high level, you need maybe, I don't know, 100 kids with really high level competing, maybe 2 times per month. And then
so there is potential, but we need to change a couple of things.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Huh?
Yeah, and that's what I am asking for.
Yeah, that's my opinion. There is some maybe big academies here. I didn't visit like full time. I'm not there full time, but what I can see.
Yeah.
Is this the kids need to work more hours, they need to work more serious, and they need to have more coaches for these high performance players.
What ages have you worked with here mostly
here?
In Sweden.
So the most hours was players between 15 and 20.
Yeah.
And then I work 1 hour in the afternoon, every afternoon, with 12 and 13 years old.
Okay. Yeah.
That.
Okay, Vinny, a couple of questions I ask to everyone. What have you changed your mind about the last couple of years?
Try to understand the players individual.
Okay. So you went from believing in the structure for the group more to the individual part.
Perfect. All before right. I'm fan of the knowledge.
Yeah.
I took so much knowledge from everyone. But then I say, well, I really need to see what the player need. And sometimes the player need heat from the middle 1 hour.
Okay.
Nothing more.
Okay.
This is what he needs. So if he needs it, we'll do it.
Okay. What do you consider waste of time in tennis?
Very good question. Very good question. For me, there is a lot of moments in the project where you can waste of time. So okay. I divide it a little bit in parts.
Yeah.
So for me, waste of time when you are on court, when you're coaching kids, is like when you pick up the balls, when you're coaching one kid and the other three is watching, they are not doing some station or circuit or something where they can improve. When they are doing just rallies for nothing, they don't have the specific thing on that rally. Okay, we do the rally from the middle, but you really need to have focus in something on that moment. When the players are training return and they don't have some goals. So that is all the stuff where I can see in Unity in my academy, sometimes the coaches are doing, and I talk with the coach and say, man,
yeah,
we are losing 20 minutes here.
So you need to have a special like task with what you're doing.
Yes, like task and specific for this player.
Okay.
So that is on the court. Outside of the court, when you travel with the players, for me, they lost too much time on the phone.
Okay.
So like you're doing a podcast. Yeah. Let's teach them to listen podcasts.
Yeah.
Let's teach them to listen some biographies from players. Let's teach them to read. Okay, some of players don't read. I say, I don't care. Take this app, download the book, and please 1 hour reading books. Minimum. From coaches, when coaches are in tournaments, that's one thing I don't like also. Sometimes on the free time of the coaches, there is too much fun.
Yeah.
And there's many coaches in tournaments. So there's a huge opportunity for us to do something.
Yeah.
Let's sit together, drink a coffee, and talk. How I improve my player, how you improve your player, and how you improve your player, or how you do your financial side with your academy. So and then we sit together 1 hour after dinner in the night and talk. So this is the moments of waste of time I don't like, and I really try to improve it in my life and the life of my players.
I'm just curious, it's another track here, but when you said how much it costs to practice, for example, at your academy now, how can the families or players afford to pay that kind of amount? Is it like only for rich people to try to be professional then, or is it sponsors that covers it?
Very good question. But when the player come to us and we sit and we come to this moment, to the financial side, we really try to help the player. So first is the money from the family. When the family cannot have that money, and then we try to see the sponsors. They don't have the sponsors. Okay. So and then we go for the player. And the player, when they are 22 or 20 something and they have ranking, we find teams, clubs in Germany, Italy, France, Switzerland. Yeah, these are the four countries. And then they play for teams, and that amount of money come to us. And also the prize money, we try to do something. So there's a amount per year. And we try to do a lot of help to take the player for minimum 1 year. We don't believe in projects for a week. We don't believe in projects for a month. So if one guy come, let's say one guy from Chile come to me, I say, okay, I can, but I only 3 months. And I say, don't come. If you have the money to play only 3 months. Let's see with this money, how we can find a solution for you to be the year. Because with the year, the improvement for the player, they can get more things.
Okay. Is it, from your experience, is it normal international that you sign contract with the players that they need to pay back with their prize money or later in their career? Like if you become top 100, you need to pay certain percent of your prize money or
I think every coaches on the high level working like this.
Okay.
Just if they have a very, very, very big salary.
Okay.
But normally they work with percentage.
Okay.
Also for the sponsor, if there is a sponsor who sponsor one player with 16 years old, okay, now they pay the 80% of the expenses. But when the player reach the top 100, if the player reaches the top 100, and then the sponsor will take the, I don't know, 15% of the prize money. It's fair. For me, it's fair.
Yeah, okay, okay. One movie or book you have been inspired by? You told me you like to read.
Yes, okay.
But if you should choose anything that it's that you would like to recommend.
Okay, so that book I read with 16 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I read four times more. I think was the book I repeat more. So that would be the book.
Yeah.
So the name of the book is How to Influence People and Make Friends. No, How Make Friends and Influence People.
Okay.
By Dale Carnegie.
Okay. And that book have that influenced you kind of a lot.
It helped me a lot on court also.
Okay. Ah, interesting. I will look it up.
Yes.
What do you believe in that everyone else think is crazy?
No.
Do you believe something that you think like now other coaches or players don't really buy into this? But you think that this is the way?
Ah, okay. Okay. I don't know. Very good question. Very nice question. Yes, there is one thing I believe where I think the people don't buy the idea.
Okay, what is that?
This is one person cannot be so bad all the time.
How do you mean? Explain.
So when you criticize somebody, or when you hate somebody, or when you don't like someone, for sure, that person have something positive and you can learn something from them.
Okay.
So this comes from my father. My father passed away 5 years ago, but on the way when he passed away, there's 2,000 people there.
Uh-huh.
Because he loves everyone and he loves everyone. And he teach me, you have to love everyone. So when I have problem with somebody, I come the word in my mind and say, I look to that people and say, I love you.
Okay.
Even if they make something wrong for me. Or even if they have something really bad or a lot of things negative, because you have something to learn from that person. And that person maybe need help from someone because of this, they have so negative stuff.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
To not judge people too fast, sort of.
And if you judge, don't worry. They don't gonna be bad all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you have strong names in the history, but also did strong names, maybe they did all this bad stuff because they have some problems and nobody helped them.
All right,
so when I see some bad stuff, I say, okay, first, that person cannot be so bad all the time.
No,
I love her, I love them, and I try to help them. That's
okay.
It. And then the things become easier.
I understand.
Yeah.
Last question. Would you like to recommend anything? Whatever.
Yes. First, I'm doing this podcast and I'm thinking you're doing it and you're a really clever person because in all my career, you know now how many steps I did and where I passed by. I said, oh, I have to write down what I believe, what is the positive things I learn, and what you're doing with this podcast. You're so clever because you take very good information from everyone. And I saw many good Swedish coaches there, which I cannot understand in the podcasts, but I'm asking some persons here in Sweden, they listen to the podcast. So what is the five positive things of this?
Yeah.
And they let me know. So my recommendation is to the people doing what you are doing.
All right.
Take the positive things from the people, put it somewhere, because now this podcast will be saved, no?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course.
It will be in the cloud.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. You have a lot of knowledge and you are doing the podcast with the person. So, okay, maybe you cannot memorize all of them, but you can remember, oh, what Frederick say on this podcast? Okay, I go there and I check.
Yeah.
So that kind of thinking, that kind of a way to do the things with the knowledge, I think is more important. I'm 100% sure is much more important than money.
Yeah.
Because I'm being here in Sweden working with these players now on this academy, not because how much money I get in my career, but how much knowledge I get.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're doing it, and I'm really jealous, but on the good way from you. Maybe I can do it in Spanish. You give me a good idea. But I think it's really, really like good advice for everyone.
Yeah.
Take the knowledge, put it somewhere.
Yeah.
And if you can organize it, it will be even better.
Thanks for the nice word. One idea with it is to share the knowledge. I mean, it's now I'm talking with you, but I mean, everyone can listen to it. And I know a few listeners, I know, take some notes with the best parts they like from each episode to save it. So I hope it's a way to communicate more between coaches and players, parents and whatever. So we can share our experience between each other. Which I think is a good idea.
Congratulations. It's an amazing idea.
And I mean, I have, I don't know how many, but I have like 10 episodes in English maybe. So them you can listen to.
Okay, so I go for it.
Thank you very much for taking your time and to sharing your knowledge. And hope to talk to you another time again.
Thank you so much, Linus.
This was Vinicius Oliveira. I think it was super interesting to hear how eager he's been at learning from other coaches. When he got to Spain and really tried to ask, tried to sit at the court and ask why coaches were doing that and that. I think it's so important as a coach to be open mindset and know that you don't know everything, that you always can learn. Sometimes maybe you can learn from bad examples, and hopefully a lot of times from good examples. Hopefully maybe this podcast has been and is one way to open up the communication and to learn from each other. I also think, I mean, it's easy to be negative, but it's interesting to hear Vinicius tell us about his experience here in Stockholm and at Mälarhöjden. It's not anything new that it's tougher in Sweden with the weather conditions, with the school system that maybe makes it tougher for players to practice a lot during the days. But at the same time, that's the reality. And if we want to compete with players from other countries, we need to, I mean, solve the problem or walk around the problem, kind of. Because when we are in school or complain over that we can't practice, well, players in other countries do practice instead. This, it was super nice that Vinicius took his time and to share his experience with us, and hopefully we can hear more from him in the future. And from me, you will hear more from in a couple of days when the next episode is released. This episode was brought to you by Tennisshoppen. Tennisshoppen is a tennis shop in the heart of Gothenburg. If you go to tennisshoppen.se, you will get 15% discount if you use the code TennisLinus at the cashier. Tennisshoppen.se.